I'm wondering how many of you out there are stressed out, maybe overwhelmed or burned out. Well, good news, my friends, is number one, you're not alone. And number two, you're human. And on today's podcast, we are going to be talking about how to transform our stress into a springboard for our life, for building and creating meaningful, purposeful lives. Stress is actually an essential part of that. And our guest today, Dr. Rebecca Heiss, is going to bust some myths about how we've been taught to deal with stress and really reframe and rewrite our own stories of how we look at stress and how we transform it to create new trajectories in our life. This is a powerful, super fun, super engaging conversation with the amazing Dr. Rebecca Heiss, author of the new book out, Springboard. And I cannot wait to dive into this conversation today. Let's do this. Hey everyone, what's happening? I am super stoked to welcome you to the Marley Williams podcast, where we will explore authentic leadership, transformational facilitation, and how to create epic experiences for your audiences every single time. I am your host, Marley Williams, bringing you thought-provoking insights, expert interviews, and actionable strategies to unlock your potential as a leader, facilitator, and speaker. Thank you for joining me on this journey of growth, transformation, and impact. Let's lead together. The Marley Williams podcast begins now. Let's dive in. Hey, everybody, what is happening? Welcome back to the Marley Williams podcast, where this week, my friends, oh my goodness, I am so stoked to have Dr. Rebecca Heiss here. She is in the house all the way from North Carolina joining us to share about her new book, Springboard, and help us deal with the stress in our life differently and better, because life can be hard and stressful sometimes.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to dive in with you because, is anybody not having a stressful moment right now?
One of the things I say is life will life you.
Life has been doing a lot of lifing recently, for sure.
Yeah. So it's, you know, what do we do? What do we do when life lifes us, Rebecca? Where do we begin? And I would love maybe for just to get the conversation going, maybe share a little bit about who you are, your work in the world, what you do, what your jam is, and what led you to the world of being an author, keynote speaker, talking all over the world about stress.
I am an author, keynote speaker, and I talk all over the world about stress. That's the summary of it. I'm a stress physiologist by trade. So I have a PhD in stress physiology, which is just like understanding the hormones, the way we behave under stress. My background before that is in evolutionary biology and I'm in behavior. And before that, if you want to like the deep cut, I'm a bird nerd. I'm an ornithologist. So I truly have a master's degree in ornithology. So like,
that is epic.
Super.
Nerdy. I love that.
Yeah,
about
not
you.
Everybody knows that about me. So that's kind of a fun
facts.
It's a deep cut. How did I get going in this? I was an academic. I was doing research. And really the short version of a much longer story is life lifed me. And in a single month, I quit my job, sold my house and divorced my husband because things happened. And I was like, I don't want to have regrets in my life and I don't want to live a life of meh. And so I'd always wanted to speak. I love the stage. I love the drama of it. I love a good story. And I love science. And I thought, gosh, you know, if I could combine those two and actually help people, like take all of this research out of the lab and bring it into people's lives where they can apply it and, you know, actually use it in a purposeful way, that would be cool. And so that's what I've been doing for the last decade. Yeah, it's wild to say that, but it's a great journey.
Yeah. You know, it's awesome to think about like the journey that got you here, right? Like even the moments of stress that you've experienced helped you to pivot, to shift, to change, to put things in perspective of like, I want to live a life that's true to me. But sometimes it's like we need that, those like whatever you want to call it. Some people hit rock bottom. Some people have like those wake up call moment when life lifes us, something happens, and like we get to choose. And I think like this conversation around stress of like, it's not about avoiding the hard things in our life. It's like, how do we move through them? How do we grow through them? How do we, I think one of the things I love that you talk about is this Post-traumatic growth.
Post-traumatic growth. Yeah, exactly. We talk about post-traumatic stress all the time. But like,
all the time.
Well, that's one thing that affects 8% of the population. But if you want to look at the other 80% that experience post-traumatic growth, maybe we should talk about that a little bit more. Yeah. I mean, to your point, I think, first of all, trying to avoid stress is a losing battle. Like, you can postpone it maybe a little bit by like getting a massage or doing some deep breaths or like drinking or scrolling your phone. I mean, there's all kinds of avoidance things that we do. And that's natural. And I'm not trying to blame or shame anybody. But it's going to be waiting on the other side, right? Like, stress is unavoidable. And I think one of the biggest issues that we've had as a society is we've been told that stress is bad and we have to get rid of it. And we try all of these things, right? We like, we read the books, we do the apps, we do the things, and then we still have stress and we're like, I am broken. What's wrong with me? And then we create more stress for ourselves because we feel like we're failing. And I want to tell everybody who's listening, oh my gosh, please, your stress response is a feature. It is not a bug. It is literally helping you to rise to the occasion under that stress, in that uncertainty, in that discomfort. It is literally feeding your body the energy that you need in those moments. So rather than trying to like push it aside and say, no, I don't want this, like we have got to reframe that and use it differently. So yeah, you're not broken, people. You're not broken.
You are not broken. I love that. It is a feature, not a bug. There is a reason. We are like evolutionary, biologically wired that way. Right. And it like to rise to these moments. And, you know, I got to see you speak and all of these examples of like, you think about that you shared a stressful moment, like a meaningful moment in your life, the most meaningful, like maybe achievement, whether it was getting a PhD, a master's degree, competing in a marathon, whatever. Right. Like, was that a stressful experience? So it's like our meaning and purpose in our life, those meaningful moments often come with stress most of the time.
Yeah, exactly. And my fear is that what we've been teaching people is to avoid those meaningful, purposeful moments, right? Like, that is my fear. I'm like, we are running away from the thing that is the actual thing that brings meaning and purpose to our life. So like, I mean, that's not just me telling a story. That's hard data. So meaning and purpose, the number one correlate to a meaningful, purposeful life is stress. It's past stressful events, it's current state of stress, it's even future worry and anxiety. So if you're somebody who's sitting there wringing your hands going, I don't know what tomorrow brings, guess what? You're probably living a really meaningful life. It's like, you know, this is a really important reframe because nobody gets stressed out over their shoe coming untied, right? This is a barometer just showing you this matters, right? I care about this. And that's, again, not a bug. This is a feature. It's a great, like, hey, pay attention. This is important to you.
Yeah, I love that so much. So, you know, we're chatting with people that are out there listening to this. Like you said, life's lifing them. Things are coming at them. They have the stresses of running a business, being a parent, having a relationship. Like, I just feel like the expectations that are put on humans in general to like be everyone, be everything to everyone, like have your shit together. And you have a process that you share, that you teach, that maybe you can share with the folks here today to help them navigate their life in a different way.
I'd be delighted. And before I do, I have to say, like, I gotta say, as you're describing this, I'm like, yeah, humans are weird. We are a weird, weird species. And I mean this, like, the example I love to give is lions, right? Lions are great hunters. I don't think I can out-hunt a lion. Like, they're stalking gazelles, we're gonna say. Like, they're incredible beasts of predation. And yet they fail 80% of the time they go for a hunt. And here's the difference between a lion and a human. No lion, after they fail at a hunt, goes, gosh, I'm a terrible lion. I can't believe I suck so bad. Like, I should give up now. I'm a terrible hunter. They take a nap. That's what they do. And humans create our own stress by going, just like spinning in this cycle of all of these negative thoughts. So like, it's not just the stressor. It's all of the thoughts that we have about the stressor and what that means about who we are and how we show up. And so we actually compound our own stress. So how do we begin to deal with this? Step one is recognizing that your stress response, again, it's a feature, not a bug, but it's really built for the ancestral environment. It's built for like 3 minutes of screaming terror through the savannah, getting chased by a lion, tiger, or bear, oh my. right? So the first step is simply to say, oh, this isn't a tiger. And what I mean by that is in the next 3 minutes, just whatever is stressing you out, if you will not be dead in the next 3 minutes, it's not a life and death situation, right? So all of the energy that your body is getting, that heart rate increasing, you're sweating, your adrenal glands are firing up, that is your body preparing you to perform, but it doesn't mean that you have to run away from something that is life-threatening. So if it's not a tiger, we get to then repurpose the energy. That's step one.
Step one. You know, I think it's so important. It's like, what are the stories that we're making it mean? And I think that moment of pause and reflecting of like, yeah, will this thing actually physically hurt me, harm me? You know, one of the things is we're treating everything in our life with like so much, like this huge sense of urgency. And one of the things that I say sometimes is, it is not a kidney in a cooler. I am not about to do open heart surgery or a kidney transplant on somebody. And the funny thing is my partner is a nurse and like sometimes it legit is a kidney in a cooler.
You know what? And again, your body is serving you for that moment. So like your partner, like those 3 minutes are critical. And so her body's like, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go. She's getting the job done. For us, when we get an email and we're like, oh my gosh, this has to be done tomorrow. Okay, that is a different story, right? And it's really important in these moments too. I think it can be really shaming for me to be like, oh my gosh, just like calm down. It's just an email, right? And we do that to one another. We do that to ourselves.
Calm down.
Calm down. Just calm down. Okay, before I even get into that, let's just talk about the fact that instead of trying in that moment to like justify that it's not a tiger, allow yourself some time with the tiger, right? Those 3 minutes of screaming terror, we're not logical in that. We're not going to be able to come. We're not even going to be able to say it's not a tiger, probably for the first 3 minutes, because we're like, right? So that's fine. Give yourself permission. Set a timer. I literally will set a timer. When I have that response, I'm like, oh my gosh. And I allow myself for 3 minutes to freak out because it gets my body into the space where I can then, okay, I'm still alive. Guess it wasn't an actual tiger. And I call this inviting the tiger in for tea, right? You're just like, come on, come on, tiger. Let's go. Let's see what you got. Come on, put him up.
I think like that acknowledgement of it versus the pushing it down or like the kind of, sometimes we want to bypass it or override it or like, oh, it's not a big deal versus like, wow, like in this moment, this feels like this email does feel like a big deal, or you feel your nervous system getting activated and your palms are sweating and like all of these things are happening. But if you can actually be with it, it can move through. Then you can go on to the next step of the journey.
We call that naming it to tame it, right?
Name it to tame it. Love that.
Right. And it works especially well with tigers, right? Like taming the tiger. Hey, love
tame
it.
Tame the tiger. Okay. I love it.
So now we know, okay, this isn't life and death. Great. And by the way, like sometimes it is. Like in your partner's case, great. Your body's already doing the thing it's supposed to do. Roll with it. 99% of the time, it's not going to be. So then we get to take all that energy that our body is giving us and we get to transfer it. This is my favorite stage. I love the transfer stage because you're already at this heightened state. And this is inevitably when you believe, because either you've been told or you tell yourself, you're supposed to calm down. And I call bull on that. Like, first of all, it's mean. It's just flat out mean.
Stop being so mean to yourself.
Calm down.
Just relax, hey, Susan. Yeah. just relax.
You would never say that to your best friend. Why would you say that to yourself, right? It's just terrible.
I always say if we talk to other people the way that we talk to ourselves, we wouldn't have no friends.
Oh, 100%.
We are terrible to ourselves.
We're so mean.
Relax, calm down. Yeah. Why are you making this a big deal? Just chill out.
Jeez, yeah. So
that doesn't work. So,
step two, it doesn't actually work. Like you can't, physiologically, you can't create or destroy energy, right? Like you can't destroy it. So if you're heightened, that's great. That's an opportunity. Like I always say, athletes are breaking world records at Olympics, at peak events when their pressure and the stress is really, really high. And they're not getting rid of it. They're using it. And we have the same ability. So rather than say, oh gosh, I'm so stressed, I'm so anxious, I'm so nervous, what else could that mean? And the way we begin to challenge what else that could mean is twofold. One, we have to get curious with it. We have to ask ourselves, what else might this signal in my body be? Because curiosity and fear cannot coexist, right? There's literally no brain mechanism that allows for those two things to exist together, which is pretty cool. So if we start getting curious, we're starting to kick ourselves out of fear. And then we can adopt another high arousal state. I suggest excitement. Although anger is a good one too. We just have to talk a little bit more about anger and how you use it, right? Well, I'll just say it now. Look, if you choose anger, that's great. Anger can be incredibly productive. Like, you can be more creative, come up with more innovative solutions. There's all kinds of really good research on anger. The trick with anger is to not point it at people, but at problems, right? So like, I can get really angry. I can be in that heightened state and I can say, oh, I'm getting curious. You know what this is? This is anger. Then point it at the medical diagnosis. Point it at the problem that your company is struggling with. But don't point it at the sales team. Don't point it at Susan. You know, this is the challenge. And where people get into trouble with anger is that. So if you want to use anger, great. Just use it appropriately. Excitement is one of my favorites. Because to me, you can't get wrong with excitement. It's like, oh, I'm excited about this. Now listen, you and I both know we're going to be lying to ourselves about that, right? Like, you're actually really scared. You're actually not really excited. You're nervous. You are stressed. You are uncertain. But the very act of saying out loud, declaring, Rebecca, you're excited, shifts the energy, not just for me, but also the people that I interact with. So one of my favorite studies, again, is we took graduate students and had them put pencils in their mouth like this. And it kind of forces a smile. And it turns out that we don't smile because we're happy. We are happy because we're smiling. So when we position our bodies as if we're excited, we throw our shoulders back, we put a big smile on, we're like, here we go. We're actually creating hormones of excitement and happiness and joy. And this is important. Your anxiety doesn't go away. It's there. It's still going to be there, right? Like, anybody that tells you they can get rid of your stress, nope. But you're starting to feel actual excitement alongside it. And now these two things are commingling. And now you're interacting with other people and they see a little bit of the excitement and they respond to you as if you're excited. And suddenly you begin to feel more excited because humans are incredibly emotionally contagious. So again, my favorite step for so many reasons, because all of this energy just starts to shift.
Yeah, it's so powerful. Like, again, in those moments of like, what am I making this mean? And how do I shift the meaning? Like, that is what makes us human. And that level of like, I think like that moment of that pause of like, oh, the story I'm telling myself, or like, or over and over, I'm nervous, I'm nervous, I'm nervous, versus shifting that energy to, yeah, like this, I'm excited. And this feels, one of my favorite words is fun, comfortable. That's a good one, right?
I might steal that. Yeah.
It's like, is this fun? Is this uncomfortable? But what if it's fun, comfortable? And in those moments, that is when we are growing, expanding, evolving, learning. Like, it's like when we're in our comfort zone, if we were experiencing no stress, right? Like, and just sat on our couch and never left our house and just did, you know, only hung out with a few select, that is like the most boring existence ever. So it's like, actually, stressful moments are the, yeah, again, I can create a new meaning around this idea of stress is like, oh, that's when I have meaning and purpose. Going up to someone new, asking for someone's number, asking them on a date. It's like, to me, what are we missing out on? Because we're not all like trusting our capacity to meet that moment. And I think when we do that in that transfer stage, we are expanding our capacity to say, like, I'm okay. I got this. I can handle this moment. I'm in the arena. I'm in the arena of being human. I'm playing in the playground. It feels uncomfortable, but it's like every time I do something, you know, I talk a lot about confidence, right? Like, where does confidence come from? It's like, it comes from doing scary shit off the lot.
Right. That's right. Yeah. And then did you die?
And it's like, it doesn't just exist in ether. It's like every time you do that thing, you're like, whoa, that was outside my comfort zone and I didn't die. I can build that self-trust.
Oh my gosh. Have we talked about type one, type two, and type three fun?
No.
Because your fun comfortable is like, oh, this is bringing up things. Okay. So type one fun is the kind of fun that most people would describe. Also, nice. We have matchy, matchy water bottle.
Matchy, matchy. Emotional support water bottle.
Type one fun is the kind of fun that most people think about. Like, it's just fun. Like, you hang out with your friends, you play a board game. Like, it's fun. Type two fun is like the fun comfortable. This is uncomfortable. I don't really love it while I'm doing it. But as soon as I'm done, like, I just ran a 5K. I didn't love it. But at the end, I'm like, cool, when's the next one? Right? That's fun, comfortable. And then there's type three fun, which is not fun during, it's not fun after, but it makes for a hell of a story. Right? Most people, given their druthers, will stay in type one fun. Because here's where you control the outcome. And when we're in, especially in stressed out states, in states of uncertainty, we like to have control. And if I'm in type two fun, or if I'm in that fun, comfortable thing, I don't know if I'm going to finish. I don't know if I'm going to complete this 5K because it's outside of my normal zone of comfort. And so I can't control it. I'm probably not going to do it. And that's when people end up in this like space of learned helplessness and inaction, and they end up missing out on the very things that are going to bring meaning and purpose to their lives.
Yeah. It's like, where are you phoning it in?
Yeah, where you play sick?
Where are you playing sick? It's like, where are you letting yourself off the hook by not putting yourself in the arena of life, of like putting yourself in those fun, comfortable moments or situations, whether you choose them or they're happening?
They find you.
They yeah. find you because they will, because you're human. Here we are.
Life's.
Okay, so we transfer the energy.
Not a tiger. We've transferred the energy. Step three, and we've already kind of been talking about step three. The step three is the trajectory. So we've got all of those like butterflies now in alignment. Where are we going to point them? How do we use all of this? There's a couple things with step three that I really like to mention. One, pointing it outwards to serve is probably the best way you can mitigate stress. So this comes from a study from 2023 looking at 90 different workplace interventions, 90 of them. And I am talking everything from like the apps to one-on-one coaching to massage. I was really hoping massage would be one of the things that mitigated stress. Turns out none of them work, with the exception of one, and that's service to others. So this is one of the things that like gives me chills every time, because it makes so much biological sense. You know, we've all heard of cortisol, which is your main stress hormone. The other main stress hormone is oxytocin. And that's a hormone of cuddling and community and togetherness. And when we go through discomfort together, we become this much closer to the people around us. And really, oxytocin is there supporting this stress response, saying, reach out, help someone, ask for help, right? It's a hormone of courage to both ask for and receive and give and offer help in these stressful times. So that trajectory, pointing it outwards and then taking an action, right? Again, we covered it a little bit already, but like, it's easy to measure the cost of our actions, and it keeps us settled back in that type one fun, just kind of like comfortable, because we don't want to fail. We don't want to be rejected. We don't want those things that come with this discomfort. But we forget about measuring the cost of our inaction. And when we don't take action, especially in stress, the stress doesn't go away. It's not going anywhere. We have to move through it, which requires taking these small trajectories forward into, I call it running at the roar, right? You got to run towards that tiger. And that's so scary. But if you break it down into small enough steps, it's not like you have to climb Everest in a single leap, right? It's these tiny little movements toward the stress that are going to get you through it.
It's so good. And one of my favorite quotes says the imperfect action is always better than perfect inaction. And for those recovering perfectionists out there, you know, I think that we want to do the right thing or the perfect thing. And like, just one tiny step to shift out of that, like the inertia or that fear response where it's like, I don't want to mess up. I don't want to do the wrong thing. So I'm just not going to do anything. And we think that somehow that's going to keep us from the stress.
Magically safe.
Magically safe. And, you know, our brains are hardwired to keep us safe. Sometimes I think, you know, if someone's just lived their life at like a 5 or a 6, it's decent, pretty good, not bad, you know. It's not below a 5, you know, whatever, I'm above the line. You don't even know what a 9 or a 10 would feel like. And so that trajectory, it's like, sometimes I talk a lot about like goal setting and motivation, like where are you going? And having a vision for, you know, your life or who you want to be or how you want to show up so compelling that instead of feeling like we're pushing ourselves and this like kind of hustle and that we are being pulled. We have this trajectory of like, this is who I want to be as a speaker, as a leader, as a parent, as a partner. Like, and so can I remind myself who I am and who I want to be and where I'm going? And can I take those actions in service of that? And I love this vision of being pulled versus I'm supposed to, I have to, I should.
I gotta. Oh, the shoulding, yeah.
The should, yeah. You know, the people shoulding. Should not yeah. All over themselves, you know? And how important that is. And the being of service to other people, right? And so often, like, that stress is, like, for speakers, too, people that are out there, like, our ego wants to look good and get it right. And so our stress freaks out. But when we shift it from, like, show up and serve is one of my mantras.
Be in service of, yeah.
Be in service. And so it's, like, reminding, it's, like, we're so sometimes focused on looking good and getting it right. And that can create just like so much stress versus I want the trajectory here is that this changes people's lives. This makes a difference. This plants the seed, you know?
Yeah. This reminds me of adaptive peaks. So evolutionary biology, all of these questions get asked about why our design is so poor. Like if you're of a certain age, we have bad backs and knees. It's like, why didn't that evolve out? Right? Like we should be better than that. Like, that's not a good design evolution. Do better. And there's a number of reasons for this. But one of them is an adaptive peak, which is basically it was good enough. And when you're on an adaptive peak, like think about this level of adaptive peak, whatever. Like I just have my hand at midpoint. And when you're there, like it's above two valleys. So it's fine. And evolution and most humans aren't going to go down the valley in order to reach the next higher peak. So you can see the better design. You can see the better life. You can see the better choice. But man, this is okay. This is fine, right? Because you got to go down the valley to climb the next peak and get to that next level. And it is so scary to leave the position of an adaptive peak to say, this is good enough, right?
It's good enough. So from that evolutionary perspective, do you have to go down to go up versus just going from like peak to peak?
Yeah. Wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be nice?
Like, but I'm so curious from a like evolutionary perspective.
Sure. So like we'll take the human back, for example. The human back evolved from chimpanzees and bonobos who were four-legged. So there's this long elongation that is built for like not bipedalism. So we've got this nice curvature to our spine. And in order for us to be bipedal, that would require an entire shift of the spine. Like, you can't get there from here. You can't just like, it would have to be an entirely different design. I always think about like Legos. You have to pull all the Legos apart to put it back together in a new way. Well, if we just add this piece and put that piece on, now it's right. Mm-mm. It's a full undo, redo.
It sounds like that's what happened with you a little bit.
Ooh, go on. Say more.
With your life.
You blow it up.
Yeah, you kind of blew it up in a way, started over. I don't know if that's what it felt like to you, but like
100%.
We're probably at some sort of adaptive peak. It was fine-ish, maybe. I'm guessing it was fine.
It was. It was fine. It was fine. Yeah.
Then it's like, am I willing
if to... If I want to get here. Marley's being very, very sweet because she knows my whole story and she's trying to determine how much she should share. And I appreciate that. But what I'll say is, look, I quit my job, sold my house, and divorced my husband in a month. And like, that is a true grenade. Like, that's a blow up. And the truth is, like, my husband was fine. He was nice. We were fine. My job was great. Like, I liked it for the most part. It was easy. I could have retired from it 50 years from now. Everything was fine. But if I wanted to get to a really love of my life level of passion, if I wanted to get to a real true calling, not just a job, I can't just, you know, say, okay, well, this has been fun. Bye. I'm going to just move to the next person or move to the next space. No, you've got to go through the devastation of the loss. You've got to reorganize. Everything's got to implode on itself and really rediscover and put together new pieces. Because if you don't, what you think you want might not be the same thing once you get through all the mess.
Yeah, it's so true. And I think, you know, it's one thing when like life's you and then you kind of have to navigate that and deal with it. But I think like the courage to choose that is like, I mean, and one of the things that I've said before is you don't have to wait for your life to suck to want to change it. I had a steady, stable job at a university in a college town. I was like living my Bellingham dream, but I was like, I was a little bored. I was like, this is it. Like, there's like this whisper. I think that we all have whisper intuition, knowing something like I'm meant for more. There's something more out there. Or like, I want a better life or an epic, amazing relationship or, you know, and people just stay in things because of that. Our brains are so hardwired for that comfort, safety, security. And again, we've lived our life at a 5 or 6, pretty good.
Yeah. And I got to say, yeah, I want to let people off the hook a little bit too, because when it was first described, we talked about learned helplessness, right? And the idea is, well, this is what I know. And so I'm just going to stay in it. It's fine. We can describe, actually, I'm going to take a minute. I'm going to describe this study because it's pretty powerful. So the original study was done on dogs and two different groups. And the first group, they electrified the floor. So the dogs were being shocked. And they had a little panel that they could press with their noses and the shocks would shut off. So quickly, these dogs learned, okay, I have agency over my life. And they pressed the panel and they shut off the shocks. The second group of dogs, same situation, except for when they pressed the panel, nothing happened. So the shocks continued. So these guys learned, nothing changes, doesn't matter what I do. Both groups of these dogs are then put into a third experiment. And in this experiment, the floor is once again electrified. There's a small barrier over which the dogs just have to leap. And when they take that little leap, on the other side, it's safe and there's no shocks. So the first group who had agency before immediately goes and jumps over and they're like, cool, this is great over here. The dogs that had no agency, the dogs that had done things and it hadn't changed, just laid down and accepted the shocks. So this begs the question, like, where are you accepting shocks in your life? In like, this is just how it is. I have no control. And again, I say this because I want to let you off the hook in that we call it learned helplessness, but it's not learned. This is the default setting of our brains. So this is like default helplessness. It is what your brain does when it decides that it has no agency, no control over a situation. It just says, forget it. This is just how it is and gives up. Y'all, let me remind you, you are human. You have so much agency. You have so much more control than you know over the stories that you tell and the situations you find yourself in and the environments you find yourself in. And yes, there are always going to be things that are outside of our control. But you have the power to take back some agency and take some little, small, tiny, itty-bitty action into that stressor that shows you that you have some hope and some power in those moments. Soapbox done.
I think to understand like that is something that is part of being human, and part of being human is also having this ability to change our story, to change our narrative, to reclaim that sense of agency over our life. And it's like every decision that we've ever made up until this point has gotten us to where we are right now in this moment. And I've said this so many times, like what got me here won't get me there. What are the new choices, actions, attitudes, behaviors, mindsets? Who are the people that are going to support me? Sometimes there are people in your life that want to keep you small, right? And so it's like, who's going to be on this journey with me to help me get to that next peak? And who's going to be with me in the valley when like things are hard or things crumble? Whether I choose that, whether life's me and I'm going through it. Whether you're at a peak, an adaptive peak, you're like, it's fine, but I can see this other peak over there. Or you're in the valley and you're like, there is no way to the top of this freaking mountain. It's like, wherever you are on that journey, I think this invitation, like, where can we reclaim our sense of self, our sense of agency in this last piece of your trajectory? Like, where do you want to go? As a coach, I've gotten on so many conversations with people. And like, one of the first questions I ask people is, what do you want?
It's so hard to answer, isn't it?
Tell me what you want. The first three words that someone would tell me is, I don't know.
I don't know.
And it's like, so number one is get clear on what it is that you want. And I think that getting, you know, so many of us have chased someone else's version of success. Right. And so that's the adaptive peak. I got the house. I got the kid. I got the dog. I got the.
Here we are. Why am I not happy? Why am I not happy? It doesn't make any sense.
So I think that it's like, what is my definition of success? What is my version of success? And what brings me joy and happiness and meaning and purpose and fulfillment? And like, that's step one. And then step two is believing that what you want is possible. Wouldn't that be nice? That's good for you. Oh, you can have that because, oh, well, Marley, I could never do what you do or have what you have. You know, it's like, do you believe that it's possible? And number three is, are you willing to take action?
And do you believe that you're worthy of having that? Like, that's the other thing.
The worthiness.
Again, the worthiness is big.
Someone said one time, it's like, we accept the love we think we deserve. Oh, I was like,
that one breaks me every time.
To the like, heart. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're speaking some truth over there. Like, oh, like, but it's like, it makes you look inside of like, what have I been accepting?
What shocks have you been accepting? What shocks have you been accepting? And then like, how are you complicit in them?
It's not blaming like other people or things outside of ourselves necessarily. It's like, what choices did I make? But from that place of like, what do I feel worthy of? And I think it's like, can I increase my capacity to receive more love, more abundance, more energy, more community, more fun, fulfillment, joy? It's like Brené Brown says that joy is the most vulnerable emotion. Sometimes people think it's fear or shame or guilt or all this stuff. And it's like, and she talks about this idea of foreboding joy, where she's like, you know, those moments in your life where like everything's going really well. And then your next thought is, when something bad going to happen? Because we would rather take away our own joy than someone else take it away. So we're like, I'm just going to like selectively numb, I'm not going to let myself feel too good so that I don't feel terrible. So we're like living in this mediocre middle ground.
Yeah. And I'll say like, the thing that I've wanted to say for a while, like as you're talking about this, it keeps coming up. It keeps coming up is who you surround yourself with is so important, because they're going to be the dogs on the other side going, why are you laying there? Come on, like, come on, get up. Or they're going to be by your side. They're going to come back over into the shocks with you and say, this sucks. Let's go. You know,
I don't know if you know the research that I remember when I taught college students. There was studies around like the biggest determinator of your success as a college student is who you hang out with.
Who you surround yourself with. Yeah.
And I think that is true. Your biggest thing that's going to determine your success is who's around you.
And that stands up for productivity, for health. Like when you look at like the way you show up for yourself in health and wellness, the way you show up for yourself in work and what efforts you're willing to put in, there's tons of studies just sitting near a high producer, high performer, like wears off on you, like in significant ways. So have a look at who you're spending your time with, because guess what? That's a reflection of you.
It's so true. You know, it's one of the reasons I moved to Portland. I lived in Bellingham and I loved it, but it was like, it's a little sleepy vibes. And I'm like, I want to be around people who move me, challenge me, motivate me, inspire me. And I didn't know anybody who was a coach and a speaker and an entrepreneur and like did all this stuff. And I'm like, all right, I want to be around that energy. And I'm really intentional with like who I hang out with, because that does shift and change how I feel about myself, the things that I do, you know, the actions that I take, like people that I just think it's such a game changer.
Absolutely. And as you said at the start, like it's lonely at the top. So if you're a leader, if you're a manager, if you're like, you're not hanging with your friends at work. So you got to find somebody that can push you and keep you honest and hold you accountable to yourself so that you can show up as a leader and lead that team. Because, yeah, that's...
And sometimes, you know, I have found myself in these situations where I've been like the leader of a community. And I built the community because I want community, but I'm not a part of that community because I'm leading the community. So
that's right. Yeah. This doesn't work.
Well, then I need to go find other leaders and community builders and speakers and facilitators who understand what it's like. Because it's like, you know, I created this like huge summer camp for women and like they're all having the freaking time of their life. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, I'm running around like a crazy person trying to like organize all the shit for them to have the time of their life.
Marley, I did one retreat. I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be so great. I'm going to bring this community of women together. Like, it's going to be epic. It was, everybody had a great time. I was miserable.
Everybody had a great time, but you. Yeah.
I was up to 2 a.m. every night, like, and in my head going, are they having fun? Is this worth it? Am I providing value? Is this enough? Like, yeah. So stress physiologist here, getting stressed out. This is part of it.
It happens. It happens to the best of us. Wow. Well, we covered a lot.
We did some things.
We rocked it out. It's not a tiger.
It's not a tiger.
You got to transfer that energy. And then where are we going? What is our trajectory? So as we wrap things up, bring things to a close, what final words of wisdom do you want to leave people with today? And then where can people find you, read your book, you know, all the things?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I guess the final words of wisdom that I would offer anybody is, if you're stressed out, good. That's a blessing, right? It means that you have a lot of meaning in your life. And rather than looking for cures and ways that this is showing how broken you are, look instead to the joy and the meaning behind that stress and utilize the stress to perform at your very best for yourself and for others. And if you want to find out more about how to do that, first of all, hire me. I love speaking. That's the jam. That is what I do the most of. So as a keynote speaker.
And she is amazing.
Ah, thank you.
I've seen it in real life.
Gosh, thanks.
Rockstar.
So, you know, working with teams, managers, leaders, any shape, size, industry, it's so fun for me. And you can find me at RebeccaHeiss.com. And if you want to do more like work individually, you can find my brand new book, Springboard, in all the places that you buy books. And also, you've heard it here first. We're releasing a course specifically targeted for these younger generations. So every single time I give a keynote, somebody asks me, what can you do for my son, daughter, person who is in their 20s or even teenagers that are like struggling with transition into college or just this high achievement anxiety? Because Gen Z, y'all, I see you. We love you. We're worried about you. Yeah. So I have a brand new course coming out next week. So pretty excited.
That's exciting.
Yeah, lots happening. So reach out to me.
And we will have all of the links for all of those things in the show notes. And I remember when I did get to see you speak, you ended with something that I loved, which we'll end with today, which is that we hope that you go out there and live very stressful lives. That is our wish. That is our hope for you. Because like you just said, that means you are in the arena. You're doing the thing. You're stepping outside your comfort zone, you're putting yourself out there in new and different ways. And I love your work because it's redefining what stress is and what we make it mean in our own lives. It's not about avoiding it or running from it. It's like run towards the tiger. Go for it and do as many things that are fun, comfortable. That's what we hope for you out there. So thank you, Dr. Rebecca Heiss, for being here, sharing your love, your heart, your wisdom, your magic, your medicine with us today. Y'all, if you love this, like this, share it, rate it, review it, send it to a friend who might be stressed out. And until next time, y'all, go out there and live some stressful lives. Love ya. See ya.
Thank you for joining us on another inspiring episode of the Marley Williams podcast. We hope you're leaving here with renewed energy and valuable insights to fuel your leadership, coaching, and speaking endeavors. I'd love to invite you to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast to help us reach more aspiring leaders and speakers like you. We have more exciting episodes and remarkable guests lined up, so make sure to tune in next time. Until then, keep leading with purpose, coaching with heart, and speaking with conviction. This is Marley Williams signing off. See you next week.